In the mid-70s, the Sex Pistols epitomized the anti-establishment, intentionally offensive attitude of British punk rock. God save the Queen! The fascist regime! It made you a moron! Potential hate bomb! God save the Queen! She ain't no human being! There is no future! The man who formed and managed the Sex Pistols was Malcolm McLaren. At the time, he owned a trendy clothing store in London called Sex. McLaren's life as a rock promoter, musician, fashion designer, and conceptual artist is the subject of a retrospective exhibit at the New Museum for Contemporary Art in New York. McLaren has often been accused of being a manipulator of the culture, but he sees himself more as an agent provocateur.
Most of the work that I've ever tried to initiate has always been from the standpoint of in the making of records and working with popular imagery such as groups and fashion and working in medias of that sort. The whole reason for my existence in that is through the nature of provocation.
What do you mean by provocation?
Well, make the ideas meet a challenge, make the ideas exact the opposite feeling to what ordinary people would normally feel when they listen to a pop record. I'd rather have them jump out of their chair and destroy the radio that they're listening to. The nature of working in those mediums after leaving art school was one which intrigued me because it had become apparent by the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s that the media seemed to be such a major instrument in controlling the general cultural flow that the idea of painting in an attic, as I was taught to do for 8 years in art school, seemed the wrong process. And I decided to use people like sculptors use clay.
You first became known in England for a clothing shop that you ran, which
that was the starting point after leaving art school. You mm-hmm. know, it was a place to basically earn a living from, and being a very Fagin-esque kind of character, I decided to sort of manipulate the situation by basically selling old radios as new radios, by selling, I suppose, old books as new books, by selling old clothes as new clothes. It was a kind of a it was an oasis at the time in the King's Road, which was very well known for being a velveted, loon-panted, dandyish street for pop fashion. And when I meant to talk about provocation before, the clothes that developed were clothes that I had to sell, which I thought would label the word sex and be sexy in a very clear and instructive manner. And the only way I thought I could really do that was to look at clothes that had a fetish nature.
Like what? Like leather
like,
clothes?
Yeah, like rubber T-shirts, mm-hmm. rubber lingerie, T-shirts that suddenly I would print on a variety of voyeuristic slogans from well-known authors in England, like Alexander Trokey, who was like our equivalent to, I suppose, your William Burroughs. Suddenly I found myself with a group of fans of David Bowie or Rod Stewart or Mark Bolan or Mick Jagger, all descending upon my store because these clothes suddenly struck a chord in their heart, which was one of being considered anti. You know, in other words, you didn't walk in step with the fellow in front of you. You walked in a different way. You had a different look.
Your greatest success musically was putting together the band The Sex Pistols and packaging them. What was your concept when you first thought it up?
How to make a living out of all these kids that were thieving in my store, to tell you the truth. I don't think it was much further than that, except I was inspired by the fact that they were ingenious at thieving a great deal of equipment in the beginning. I knew it couldn't have come from the pockets of themselves. It had to have been stolen from the likes of David Bowie, etc., who, in fact, in the end, I understood, was one of the people who owned a variety of equipment that the Sex Pistols ultimately played. It was always a scary thing, I think, for them to go on stage with all this equipment, because they were terrified to think that there was some roadie in the audience that would recognize the particular guitar or amplifier.
You've called the Sex Pistols the great rock and roll swindle. In what way was it a swindle? What was the swindle?
It really was about swindling your way to the top of a record industry, which is really founded on a great deal of hype and sensational advertising and a tremendous amount of manoeuvring with the likes that be in this kind of world we live in. It was a way of doing it, but upstaging it and doing it without necessarily the record company, but doing it by your own will. It was a swindling by the purpose of really deciding not to play, really deciding sometimes not to even give out a record, really by deciding not to even be played on the radio. We did that with one record, God Save the Queen, which I think probably stood the record of the only record that reached the number one in the charts without any airplay, without seeing the group, and in many instances without even being able to buy it in most of the main chain stores, and yet within 1 week became the number one record. It didn't matter that you couldn't hear it. It was the attitude.
Well, part of the attitude that the Sex Pistols had was to destroy things, to show no respect even for the record company people who were giving them money.
Yeah, to be like gods, really.
Did you encourage them to do that?
Oh, always. I think that the idea for me, you know, pop stars were only extraordinary if they were really mythical, and I think that I tried to make the Sex Pistols as mythical as possible. When I finally came to work on my own music, it was something that I discovered was so similar to what operatic characters are. You know, they're equally mythological beings, and they're totally immortal, they're totally irresponsible. There's nobody more irresponsible in the world of popular culture, including opera, than Don Giovanni, far more than Mick Jagger or Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious or Boy George put together. That's really what I was trying to say, and I think that's what the Sex Pistols became. They were very operatic, really.
In some ways, you see the Sex Pistols as being this success in packaging and in image and in manipulation. But I think what that doesn't take into account is that they were a good band. I mean, some of their
ultimately,
records were really, really good.
But that's nothing you ever want to admit, because being good is not the idea. Being bad is what's more exciting, you see.
Yeah, but I mean, how much of their success do you think had to do with the fact that they were doing good stuff? I mean, and beyond the packaging.
I think that was the final icing on the cake, and I think it was the thing that ultimately... they played with credibility. I don't think they were playing to sell a record. They were playing for reasons that they had something to say. It's a rare incident today that you'll find that in many groups.
Does it ever get tiring always looking for a new trend to start, as opposed to having some kind of craft that you could just continue with?
Yeah, I wish I'd have stayed sometimes painting, but... I'm afraid I was an art student in the late 60s, and the whole global village, a multimedia explosion, and having walked into an art gallery and seen an Andy Warhol exhibition at the age of 18 kind of completely changed me. He was quite responsible, I think, of me thinking of art as business, with his famous quote that art, good art is good business and bad art is bad. That really just threw me in a spin and took me down a road that I still don't think I've finished yet, you know. That was a policy, I think, that was inspiring a great deal of my fellow students at the time, and we all crossed over into all these other areas. I never thought I'd end up in music. I still can't play a single note, and most people think I sing flat. Well, what can you say? You know, it's the job I seem to be making work.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Pleasure.
The exhibit Impresario, Malcolm McLaren and the British New Wave is at the New Museum of Contemporary Art in New York until November 20th. From one of McLaren's own records, this is his interpretation of Carmen. 47th. Carmen's an alley.
stuff.
This is Fresh Air.